You're listening to Brazen Bookworm's Unrighteous Reading Rebellion, a reform book snob's journey and musings through all things romance. Some language may not be safe for all ears. Frequent use of sarcasm may occur. You're listening to Brazen Bookworm's Unrighteous Reading Rebellion, a reform book snob's journey and musings through all things romance. Some language may not be safe for all ears. Frequent use of sarcasm may occur.
Yay, recording in progress. I'm so excited. So today we've got Coco Hart joining us all the way from across the pond in the UK and super excited. I think this is going to be the first time many people have seen your face, your beautiful face, and definitely the first time they've heard your voice. So welcome, Coco. We're super excited to have you here.
Yay! Thank you. I'm really nervous, but so excited. So
that's good. We're just going to sit here and listen to you talk for a while.
And there's no reason to be nervous because it's just a bunch of friends talking. That's all this ever is.
This is why I love this podcast, because it just sounds so much fun every time.
Well, good.
You want to be that corner bookstore that you just come and hang out and, you know, bring a drink and get cozy and talk shit about books.
Yeah, so, definitely.
Yeah, and you can be as open as you want to. We do put a disclaimer at the beginning that there is some foul language and some topics might not be suitable for children because we have zero filters. So you're invited to be filter free as well.
God for that. Oh, I swear like a trooper and it's really bad, but it just comes out. So I was trying to be really filtered, but now I don't have to be. It's great.
No filter. So tell us a little bit.
A cup of tea.
You need a cup of tea.
How is that? It just brought me a cup of tea.
That was nice.
Aw, I love it. So tell us a little bit about you, who you are, what you write. We've got lots of questions, but we want to give you a chance to tell everybody about yourself first.
Okay, so I am a mother of four. I've got four daughters and they are madness, just sheer madness, but in the good way. We live in London. I'd like to move out of London into like the nice countryside and just be away from the concrete jungle a little bit. But London's all I've known. I was born here and still here. The books that I write, they're contemporary romance. They are filled with happily ever afters. Very family focused, I think. I don't know what else to say, really.
Well, I mean, The Cooper Sisters is your first series. You do have one book before the series, so Julie will do her magic, but just everybody sees it. This was your debut, and this is a standalone. Yes. It's thick, it's girthy, it's a nice, long, snuggle in, grab your favorite drink, kick everybody out of your house, grab a box of tissues and chocolate, and settle in for a wild ride. I love this book. I was so impressed that this was a debut novel. So this is the first one. And then definitely family focused. And then we've got the Cooper Sisters series
right here,
the first three books. So tell us about, because a lot of series, and I'm throwing this at you because I don't think I put it in the questions, but I just thought of it. So here goes my squirrels. Most authors, when they write series, they write about brothers. Brothers are very popular. So why did you decide to write a series based around sisters?
So I grew up with two sisters and one brother, and I've got four daughters. And I've read so many series where they are all about brothers. And I wanted to create a series where there was these four sisters who had similar banter and similar relationships and similar just everything that the brothers would have. I wanted to have these four girls doing exactly the same things. And I also wanted them to be the ones that have to do the grand gestures at the end. I wanted to just put that little twist on it, because I haven't read a lot of books where it's the girl that makes the mistake and has to do the grand gesture and has to do the groveling and everything. And I just wanted to put that little bit of a twist on it. I think growing up with my sisters, I know my brother was there, but he was one of us. So growing up with my sisters as well, I think it just kind of influenced it. And it just, they always say to write what you know. Mm-hmm. So I don't have boys. My household is all girls. I mean, besides my husband and my dad, there's no boys in the house at all. So it's just all girls, very, very, very girl dominated. So I think that was probably what did it.
I love it.
So your household is awash in the estrogen ocean over there. Oh, so that is that is what you know.
And the bird are both females as well. So it's just like there's no escape.
Bless your husband's heart.
I know, right? He's a good man, isn't he?
He is. He really is.
I love it.
He always said he wanted boys as well. He always said he was gonna have boys and he wanted to have loads of boys. And now looking back, he's like, do you know what? I wouldn't change it. I wouldn't swap any of them to have boys. They're gonna look after me and they're gonna be, you know, just my daddy's girls. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. And they are, which is wonderful. And I love that you took that and you made that twist on it so that even though it's, because you can take sisters and still have the guys have to do the grand gesture, but you present characters that are flawed. You present characters that are deep and that have strengths, and there's balances in there too. But I love that they are the ones who are doing the grand gesture, because it does show that sometimes we have to be the ones to step up. And say, oh man, well, okay, I screwed up. Let's see how I can fix this.
Just once.
We're allowed one screw up, but then we fix it in grand style. And then everybody's like, okay, we're back to normal now. The balance is reset. So I know this is, like I said, you're relatively new. You're a very new author. And I am trying to remember, I think I knew you as a reader before you became an author. And when you started writing, I was like, finally, because you bantered it back and forth. And I was so excited when you finally were like, I've got my first book and, you know, one chance to read it. But so I don't remember how the other Stalker Sisters, okay, I was probably the enabler in this one. I'm gonna claim enabling, but Susie's like, uh-huh. Susie, how'd you find Coco?
You, come on, that's 100%. I'm going to answer for all of them.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure, yeah, Julie found, yeah, Ron, same.
No, actually, I think I met you in a reader group first. So okay. I might have known her before you.
That's possible.
Maybe.
Ron was one of the first people that I reached out to when I was debating about whether or not to step into this whole indie author business, because she was just so open and so kind and so honest, and just I felt comfortable being able to reach out to her, and I did, and she was a superstar.
Go for it, girl.
I love it.
Let me read it first.
I love it. And I love that you felt comfortable in that reader group and with Ron to step out of your comfort zone and say, okay, I have this idea. Where do I go? What do I do? Should I do something with it? And you know, all of us are always going to tell any author, yes, go for it.
If
you have an idea and it's in your head and you want to read it, you need to write it. If you find something that you want to read and it hasn't been written yet, you need to write it. So
just do it.
I know sometimes I'm like a little snarky and people are like, well, I wish they had done blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, if you don't like it, go write your own damn book. But in this case, I think it was really one of those situations where it was like, write your story, write your book. So I'm glad that you did.
Only you can.
That's true.
That's it. Exactly.
So we're mostly talking, I know we were originally, you know, setting up, this is a book club for The Forever Kind, which is your newest release. And it is Cleo and Anthony's story. And it was definitely not the first one I've read. Julie, it wasn't the first one that you read, right?
No, Julia. Julia.
Juliet and Connor.
Juliet, yes, thank you.
Yes. And which I thought was interesting because it's a series, but you jumped in book two. So just to kind of squirrel off of that for a second. When you read these, because everybody's like, oh, a series, I'm not sure if I have time for a series. Of course, everybody's time for a series. But if you wanted to jump in as a standalone, are these standalone, Julie, in your mind? Were you able to jump in, standalone, go for it?
Yes, absolutely. Like I said, I read the second of the series first and did not feel lost at all.
Same. Which says something about authors who can write series as a standalone interconnected that you can kind of jump in wherever. I always say go to the beginning because then you meet Nell and Will, Mr. Shakespeare, and Nell's the oldest of the sisters. And that was something else I noticed, which is interesting because a lot of authors, when they write a series, they go in almost in birth order, you know, not always. And you haven't, you've jumped around. Just why? Why did you write the series the way that you wrote it?
So again, I think I took that from my setting. We didn't pair off in chronological order. So my brother didn't settle down before my sisters or anything like that, and he was the oldest. So I think I kind of just went with that kind of dynamics because it's what I had in my sort of life, you know. But it was also, Nell's book was always going to be first. And when I outlined them, I did have them in chronological sort of order. I had them all so that it was one after the other. But they just didn't speak to me in that way. So Nell's book was done. And the whole way through her book, I think because Juliet spent a lot of time with Nell, it just felt right that she should be the next one to come. And I think because her and Connor were so... I don't know, they'd had so much history and we didn't know what that history was. I just didn't think that I could drag it out for another book. It had to come to a head. So I think it was more so them speaking to me than anything else as well.
I love it. And your characters speak to you.
We've had conversations. Okay, in full disclosure, I am Coco's editor. We do chat back and forth often. We run through stuff for books. Y'all be jealous because I'm in Amelia's book now and holy cow, you're going to love her, but I'm jumping ahead.
We're not there yet.
But I love when authors say, and Coco's not the only one who's like, they told me, we joke a lot about how you don't create the stories. You just write up the incident. They do stupid shit and you write up the incident report. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's kind of what I think that's what good authors do. So, and before we get ahead of ourselves, we have quotes. So okay. I'm like jumping all over the place. I would like to throw quotes in because I think it's good for authors to hear what hit us as readers, what made the impact in what you wrote. Julie, you're going to start because that way you know where they are. You found them.
This is chapter 8. I listen to you even when you're silent. I'm listening. I'll always give what you ask for, even when you don't say the words. We all want that out of our mm-hmm. actually know what we need, know what we want without us having to say a word. I can walk into a room and my spouse will know if I'm having a good day or a bad day. That's what you want. So I like that quote.
Just gave me chills.
I love that. Me too, and I wrote it.
Wrote that. I know. Isn't that amazing when you hear something that you wrote and it's so powerful how it hits people? Susie, you're up.
Don't let the past make you scared of the future. That was like, I was like, wow. I get deep on that one. I have another one. Do you want me to read the next? Mm-hmm. It says, don't look at her like that. Our Marcus will know everything, and then so will everyone else. And then Marcus down a little bit says, so how long have you been two have been together? Miss Cleo is very tight-lipped about the whole thing. Marcus bounces in his seat like an excited child, and Cleopatra glares at him. Can I tell you how much I love Marcus? Can I just tell you, like, that's the best friend that everybody wants.
Oh, I so want Marcus to be a real, actual person to be sitting here with me. I love him so much. He does not stop talking, though, ever.
Marcus is one of those that jumps off the page that everybody loves. Julie? Yeah, no.
I fully expected Susie to pick this quote that I'm going to say. And since it's about Marcus, and we're going to, or actually he said it, Well, aren't you a mighty fine specimen of a man? You like pain.
Marcus has no filter. Marcus has no shame.
I love it. No, he doesn't.
He's... When you create a character, a side character, that is so deep and so well developed that everybody wants that character for themselves, you know, and it's... Marcus has been that way from the beginning. Like, the minute he jumped in the book, everybody was kind of like, oh, he's going to be another... Everybody knows who that character is, right? Uh-huh. And I was like, uh-huh. Marcus is going to always be Marcus. He's always going to have that sense of self. And as soon as people are talking about Marcus, like, I don't even have to know that they're talking about your book, but somebody will mention something Marcus, and I'm like, I know exactly who they're talking about, because yeah. It's some weird, you know... They'll post something and it's like, oh, that, so that's something Marcus would say. And I'm like, mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it really yeah. is. Ron, yours is great. Please do yours next.
Let's see if I can do it without laughing. Mine comes from the prologue. And it was the moment that I knew I was going to love this book. They're having an argument about a little incident. And Cleo says to her soon-to-be ex, what? You slipped and your dick accidentally fell into her pussy? Seriously? And I'm like, yep, I'm good.
And it sets the tone so well. Juliet has a tone. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Cleo.
Well,
Juliet had one too.
You know what? That's the thing. All of these sisters have their own tone. Like, you don't mm-hmm. read this book and get mixed up with who's saying what. They all have their own. Nell is the kind of the kind-hearted, motherly, very concerned, but man, does she have a snark side when she wants to. And Juliet is, she's so young and she's still coming into her own, but yeah, she has that sharp tongue, I think, because she's the youngest. Mm-hmm. She's picked it up from the other sisters, because there's no doubt about the fact that Cleo, Queen of Darkness, and Amelia the Shark have these vastly different personalities from Nell, and it all filters into Juliet just kind of becoming this mix of what she sees and still trying to find herself.
Mm-hmm.
Which is very much what happens until this night. And I still talk about, I know we're not supposed to be, but I'm going to do it anyway. I still talk about Juliet until this night being one of those characters that a lot of people have said, I need permission to not love Juliet.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you have permission, because she's real and honest and raw, and she's still becoming who she is. And sometimes I think Juliet doesn't really like herself.
Yeah.
So
100%. She spent so much of her time trying to get away from the spoiled princess view type that she thinks everyone's got about her. And she doesn't even mean to have, she doesn't mean to be a spoiled princess. It's just the way that she's been sheltered and she's been protected. She's got three older sisters who are very much so like, don't do that. She's the baby. And it's like, she's not a baby. She's a full grown woman. And I think she even tries to get away from it, and she runs away and she tries to distance herself from that whole aspect of her life, and it doesn't really work that well.
It doesn't work that well, but it helps her become who she's becoming within, yeah. you know, her sphere of her family and herself. And what's neat is that part of her story happens concurrently with The Forever Kind. So you don't see a lot of her in there, but I think it's cool the way those two, they kind of parallel each other for a while until they split, yeah. Which is neat, because each of your stories builds on that timeline. It's not one and then the next and then the next. There's a little bit of overlap in each one. So you get more of the sisters, and the text conversations are my favorite. I'm just making a little note here so that when I read it, I know where I'm reading it, because it all jumbled together. And this text conversation is one of my favorites. And Cleo says to Antony, they're trying to figure things out, and she says, "What do you want then?" And in her phone, she has him as Antony slash Twatface. That's his nickname. We all know Antony as Twatface.
He says,
"I want the forever kind of love, not the fleeting one, with someone I was meant to be with." And they're discussing a party, like how things are happening at an engagement party. And Cleo's like, so fancy dress then. He's like, "Avoidance tells me more than you know, Cleopatra. Good night." And I love that. It goes back to that him listening when she's not saying anything, and her avoiding everything. And
she just doesn't, she's just like, nope, I'm not going in there, I'm not going there, I'm not doing that. And he's just, okay, I'm hearing you, I know what you're saying, I don't even have to hear your words, I just know.
Yeah,
it's and then love so much.
He's
Antony's a special kind of book boyfriend.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk, so we'll get to him in a second, but this other quote is another one that goes towards kind of the depth. And it's also a theme that not only do we see in the books, but I think that we see in the groups that we're all in. He lifts his hand to my chin and raises my head, so I'm back to looking up at him. "Never lower your head to me. You're my queen, Cleopatra. If you lower your head, your crown slips, and we can't have that." Sorry, more goosebumps. And we talk about women who fix each other's crowns without letting them know that they're crooked. But having that book boyfriend who's like, "I'm not even going to allow you to put yourself in a position where it can slip." Twatface is quite the book boyfriend. So, you know, we've been jumping all over the place, and I want to kind of get back to the forever kind a little bit. So we had some questions that we wanted to talk through. And I think, Ron, I think we might have already kind of covered your first one.
Yep.
But so, Julie, you had one that was book related.
Just what was your favorite scene to write in the forever kind?
Think it has to be the text messages, just the banter between them. And I think you can get so much, you can show so much through the text messages, because it's just pure dialogue, and I love to write dialogue. I'm not a fan of writing too much description, as Michelle will tell you. I'm more of a fan of the dialogue. I like just the people speaking, but I love the text messages. And it's, we've got a family group chat over here that we're all in, and it's just, I just took the banter and just the jokes and everything from that. And yeah, it's got to be the text messages. That was my favorite part.
Well, we love the text messages too, and they're so funny. I sit there and I read them and I'm like, this could be my friends and family. In fact, some of them mirror some of the chats that I've had online with people. So they're really real, which is something I love. I think, Ron, were you going to say something? I thought I saw you start to.
No.
Okay.
Maybe not.
Every now and then I'll like look over to my notes. I look back and I'm like, and then I feel like I'm monopolizing the conversation because I never shut up either. I'm kind of like Marcus. I never shut up. Susie, you had your question was really good too.
What was the most difficult part in writing Forever Kind?
Do you know, the Forever Kind was really, really easy to write. It just flowed from me. I didn't really have a point in that book where I went, I don't know what I'm doing, or they're not talking to me, or anything like that. So that one's really difficult to answer. I can't honestly think of anything that was difficult to write in that one. Juliet's book, Till This Night, now that was a nightmare. I think I rewrote that book about 6 times. I changed the premise, everything. So I think I was due an easy book after that one.
So what made Juliet's book so difficult?
She kept changing her mind. She kept changing her voice and what she wanted to have through the story, what she wanted to show through the story. She just kept changing everything. At one point they were a friends with benefits story, and I think I wrote about 30,000 words. And it just, I just went, no, this is just not it. And she, and you know, Connor's standing there and he's saying, I wouldn't be doing this. This is not what I'd be doing. And I'm like, yeah, I get you. I do get you. This isn't, it's not, it's just not right. And it just, it went, I didn't know whether I should have the jumping back to the memories or not have the jumping back to the memories. Just, and it just, yeah, that one was a nightmare to write. But I think it turned out okay.
You got in your head a little bit with that one.
I did. I really did.
And, you know, I think something that I think we've all seen, because we all have different roles within Romancelandia, whether it's as a PA, it's as an editor, it's as a reader, it's as an author, we see so many things come up in groups. And there was a big discussion right around the time you were writing Juliet's book about flashbacks and POV, you know, point of view and everything else. And I think it's enough to make an author really doubt their own intuition about what they should be writing when you see, oh, well, someone doesn't like third person point of view and someone doesn't like, doesn't think there's ever a reason for flashbacks. And this person said that every book should have a third act breakup. And this person said, you have
no book
so much
should have a third act breakup.
Right. You know? Right. You there's so much to absorb as an author and your book, they're all very different. The characters are very different. The premises are very different. And you can go from, I went from box of tissues to multiple spit takes of, you know, Coco knows, Carissa knows, Noelle knows. Every now and then I will put something in the margin that says, and there goes the tea. Because that is when I'm drinking and I shouldn't be, and it's usually a Marcus. And all of a sudden my computer is splattered. I keep napkins next to it and wipes, and I'm like, there goes the tea, quite literal spit take. Because I'm not expecting it, and all of a sudden it's like, ah, there it is. Having a character like, Julie, you okay? Coughing. Having a character like Marcus who can turn something on a dime like that, I think is really valuable. But as an author, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. When you read things in groups as a reader, how does it make you feel about what you're writing when it doesn't fit what someone's saying that they like?
Do you know, when I was writing that book, it was still, I was still very, sorry, unsure about me as a writer as well. So I think, like you said, I did get into my head and I did listen. I tried to listen to everyone and I tried to make everyone happy and have it so that this person didn't want this. So I didn't, oh, well, I'm not going to do that. And then this person didn't want this. And then I'm not going to do that, to the point where I sat here and said, right, well, I've got nothing to write because I can't write something and make everyone happy. Now I kind of, I kind of take it all with a pinch of salt because, like I've said, these characters speak to me. And Juliet wasn't happy with the way that her book was being written. She wasn't happy with the way it was going. And then Connor wasn't happy with the second way that it was going. So it was more so listening to them and making it right for them. And I do go into the reader groups because I am a reader still and I am in the reader groups and I do listen to what people say. But ultimately, I think as an author, we can't make everyone happy. And that's something that I'm trying to keep drumming into my own head, because you know that I'm in my own head quite a lot. So I'm trying. I'm a work in progress.
But Juliet's book was your third work, you know, and that third book is, I mean, I've watched it with multiple authors. When you hit that third book, you've got imposter syndrome because, you know, you've done it and, you know, you think you might know what you're doing. At the same time, you are sure you have absolutely no idea what you're doing. Yep. And it is a pivot point for most authors, is that third book, that it's where they catch their wind. And you did. I mean, I think that, and it obviously you did, because Cleo's book was easier to write. Mm-hmm. You know?
So Ron, that goes kind of into your other question about the series.
Oh, so what have you what in all of well, I'm going to ask about not just the series. I want to know all four books.
Yeah.
What's your favorite? Which is your favorite? And what did you like best about the character in the in your favorite?
You know what? I think Cleo and Anthony's is my favorite. Just because it is funny and it's a bit more light, and it's Anthony. I fell in love with Anthony. He just made me laugh, and he's just one of those characters that you're. I mean, I was hearing him speak, and I'm reading him out to Mr. Coco, and Mr. Coco is just sitting there laughing as well. And I was like, wow, I've made him laugh. This is good. So I think Anthony and Cleo are definitely my favorites so far. So far, because I write books in advance, so I've got Amelia and the novella, and then I've got two others written as well. So I've got books written in advance. So at the moment, Cleo and Anthony are my favorites from them. Cleo is just, I love the fact that Cleo is the queen of darkness. But she's so vulnerable, and she doesn't think that she's vulnerable at all. She thinks that she's this impenetrable force, and she's, you know, she no one can see through her, and everyone can see through her. Everyone knows that she is this creature that is made for the forever kind of love. And you know, Anthony can see it from the very beginning, and she's still, no, I'm not that kind of girl. That's not for me. That's not for me. And that I love the fact that her vulnerability shines through, and she's just completely oblivious to it.
And I love the fact that he never gives up.
Never gives up.
He knows. And it's he takes some shit for it too.
Yeah, he
He
really
takes shit for it from Amelia. He takes shit for it from his best friend whose name just
Charlie.
Charlie, thank you. I knew I was like, the minute I start to talk about him, it's the squirrels are gonna run away with his name. And their little bromance is great. If you haven't read this book yet, when you get to the ice cream scene, message me, because the minute I got to that scene, I messaged Coco. I was like, this is the best thing ever.
That scene is my favorite scene. I love that scene so much.
It's so visual. I mean, the movie played in my mind on that, where it was so visual, and I was like, this is freaking fantastic. I absolutely love that scene. And the two of them and their interplay gave so much more depth than just that little bit into their personalities, which is great. Because we don't get Charlie's story because he's already, this is the engagement party. He's getting married. He's already got his HEA. We don't get his HEA off. It's all off screen, which is fine.
You
We
do see
get.
more in the spin-off ones, though. So Charlie's quite a key player in those books as well.
I love it. I love it. I'm looking back at the questions just to see. We talked about influencing your life, your characters, your sisters growing up. What's next? So talk up to us about what's coming up next.
So we've got Amelia's book. Which Amelia's book's different, I think. It's a little bit more spicy, I think, than the last ones. And she's Amelia is just a force to be reckoned with. And I loved writing her character. She's so strong and she's so badass and just doesn't give a fuck about nothing. And I love her. Like I want to be her when I grow up. I want to be Amelia Cooper. I'm kind of a little bit in love with their story. It's different, and hopefully everyone loves it too. And then after that, I had no intentions of ever writing a story for Marcus. Marcus was just literally meant to be a side character. But everybody has just mentioned a story for Marcus, so Marcus gets his happily ever after in a novella that's after Amelia's story. It's a little bit different. I don't know if it's going to work the way that I'm seeing it working, but that's Michelle will whip it into shape and see whether it works or not. But And then after that, I've got the spin-off from the Heath Hampstead Players. So we met them briefly in The Forever Kind. We met Jackson Brady, the American footballer to me, but soccer player to you guys. And he is in love with his childhood best friend. And yeah, we see a lot of him. And then we've got the goalie Lockhart. We've got his story too. And then we've got Jensen Brady, who is Jackson's brother. And this story is the first story that I've ever written that is not set in London. It's set in Syracuse in America. And I know I didn't want to do a story that wasn't set in London because London's all I know, or UK, Britain, it's all I know. But I was speaking to Val, who is from Syracuse, and she literally was like, I'll help you. I'll help you with everything. So there's been a lot of, Val, does this make sense? And can you do this? And Americanize this, please. And so, hopefully it works. But yeah, so they're the next three. And then I've got three books outlined for after that. So
yeah. Well, Syracuse is my neck of the woods, so I'll be your sensitivity reader.
I love how this kind of comes together. So Val is a reader. She's your alpha reader. She's a book friend. Val is a big friend of ours also. She was a huge help at Charm. She's one of our Charm City Romanticon volunteers, and she's been in the book community for a while. Val and I message when I find something in a book where I'm like, I have to share because it's hilarious, and we, you know, back and forth. She's been a huge supporter for you. She's a huge supporter for authors in general. She's great. And I love that you rely on having an alpha reader like that. I mean, she's kind of your alpha and beta reader.
Yeah.
Which I know, if you know, some authors don't do any of that. They just write, they have an editor, and they send it out to ARC, and that's it. Okay, so another question I'm going to put you on the spot with is, how do you feel having that alpha reader, that beta reader, helps with you with developing your books, pulling things together? How does that work for you?
I don't think I'd be able to do it if I didn't have them. So I've got my sister and Val, who are my alpha readers, alpha, beta. They were literally, whenever I say my sister, everyone gives me a look as if to say, your sister, yeah, she's just going to tell you it's great. No. My sister is a little bit of Amelia and Cleo mixed together. She's has no filter. And I remember giving her the first four chapters of I'm All Yours. And she read the first four chapters, gave it back to me and said, fix it. It's absolute crap. I'm not reading no more. Fix it. And I was like, okay, fair play. And I did, you know, she gave me constructive criticism with it as well. But the first initial was just, it's crap. Fix it. So, you know, it's, I'm glad that she did that, because if she hadn't, I would have been giving it to you as crap.
And I would have been giving it back saying,
it's crap, take it back. But, no, Val is amazing. She will. So my sister reads it, and she reads for plot, and she reads for the flow and things like that. She reads it just as a reader. And she will say to me, this works, this doesn't work, this works, this doesn't. Whereas Val will read it, and she'll read it as kind of like an editor, but a reader as well. So it's like she won't be putting comments in and stuff like that, but she will be reading it and saying to me, this sentence doesn't, it just doesn't flow. It doesn't flow properly. And it's amazing, because as soon as she points it out, I'll go, yeah, you're right, it really doesn't. Boom, how about this? And she's like, yeah, much better. So it's like I've got three pairs of eyes on it before anyone else gets to see it, really. And it's, I think it's much better. I'm not knocking anyone that doesn't use them. Just for me, that's just the way that it works.
Well, writing's a personal process. You have to find the process that works best for you. Some people don't feel they need it. They don't want it. Some people have other eyes on it that are, you know, different from what you'd consider a beta or an alpha reader. Some people do multiple betas or ARC readers that give them a lot of feedback. If your process works where you have more multiple feedback early, then that's your process. And I love that you recognize that and take advantage of that, because a lot of people are very nervous about showing other people their work. They are nervous about the feedback. They're nervous about, there's also a very real fear in the publishing world of somebody taking your work and claiming it. It happens, unfortunately. We know it happens. And that can be a huge fear for an author to say, you know, here's my baby. Let me know what you think. And then to have somebody basically kidnap it and say, no, it's my baby.
My baby.
Yeah. So I recognize that that's not how everybody works for whatever reason, but I love the fact that you embrace that ability to do that. And I love when I'm going through the doc and I'll see Val has pulled teasers already. And I'm like, yes, that's perfect. Because she has a really good eye for that too.
That's something that I really struggle with doing. I really struggle finding the teasers. I just end up reading the whole thing, and I then get back to it and go, hang on, I was meant to look for teasers, and I've just read the whole book again and not found any. Whereas Val, you, my sister, you go through it and you'll find these things, and I'm like, oh yeah, why didn't I see that?
And it's sometimes those extra sets of eyes is exactly what you need, that extra set of brain. Sometimes set of brain, that extra brain. Sometimes it's the distance, you know, the removal from the distance that you remove yourself from it to say, let me look at this differently. And I'm kind of excited about the fact that you're doing one that's not in the UK. So, and that you're using people who are local to where you're having it, because I will readily admit the first time you sent me something and you said, would an American footballer say this? And I kind of went, because we don't call them that. It was kind of funny. But you asked me about superstitions at one point.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, that doesn't even enter my mind of there's this, I don't call it a cultural difference exchange, but it's two opposite sides of the pond, and they definitely have different views on sports. Things work differently. And that kind of plays into Amelia's book too.
Yeah, it really does. So I'm always constantly aware. But I think because I've been speaking to yourself and to Valerie for so long now, I'm aware of the differences. I'm aware of the words that are different and the terminology that's different. And I read a lot of hockey romance books. And we don't have hockey over here as much. It's not as big over here. So the superstitions that sort of jumped out at me at them, I was like, so is this like an American thing? Because we don't really have that over here. And it was when I messaged Val and I messaged you and I was like, would this be a thing? And it's like, yeah, that would be a thing. But I think because I've been speaking to Val since I think about 2018, 2019. And we've had those conversations about biscuits and biscuits. And, you know, we had the awkward conversation with me saying I'm dunking my biscuits into my tea, and she's got an image of me dunking bread rolls into my tea. And I'm like, no. Okay, cookies. Then cookies. She's like, yeah. I went, see, to me, cookies have got chocolate chips in. And she's like, no, biscuits are rolls. I'm like, okay, cool, that's fine. We'll just agree to disagree. It's fine.
I have to know what you first thought of when somebody said biscuits and gravy.
You know, I literally went, what? I mean, I know we have up north, we have people that have chips and gravy, and I'm like, fair play, that's fine. That's quite a nice concoction. Bread rolls and gravy? I don't know, like biscuits, like
cookies. What? I'm having this image of like you say biscuits, like the sugar cookies and gravy, and I'm like, oh, that would be oh.
But there's a real difference between a biscuit and a roll. Like,
okay.
A biscuit isn't bread. It's
okay.
Like flaky, like pastry,
like a croissant kind of thing,
more like a croissant, yeah. than a roll,
but even thicker, like,
but it's,
yeah,
it's denser. It's like maybe if a croissant and a cake had a mix. Only it wasn't sweet.
Okay.
Texture wise that would be, I mean, it's layered like that, so
yeah,
it's not the same thing as a dinner roll.
Cookies make me giggle, the whole cookies and biscuits thing, and chips and fries, because, you know, they're fries. And you say chips and gravy, I'm thinking, like, you know, crisps.
Yes.
And I'm like, yeah.
Biscuits are like scones.
Scones.
Yeah.
Okay.
The texture of scones, that's what a biscuit's like here.
Yeah.
Scones to me are cakes, though.
Yeah.
Cakes
less,
and gravy? Again.
Yeah.
When I come over, I'll try biscuits and gravy.
When I was reading your book and you said football player, It took me a while to figure out why you were describing the football player's legs. And I'm like, then I picked up and I'm like, oh my gosh, he's a soccer player.
Soccer player.
I text the girls, I was like, oh my God, I just realized he's a soccer player.
And soccer players' legs are very different from our American football
Yeah,
players'
that's why I was
legs.
confused. I was like, why is she describing the football player's legs?
I've
And then it
been
made
asking
sense.
them. Well, before the season finished, I was doing a lot of research because Mr. Coco loves to watch American football. So I was watching American football a lot because obviously, so Jensen is an American footballer and his brother's a UK soccer player. I was watching it a lot to just sort of see the differences. And it's, yeah, very different. Very, very different. Although they do have very nice tight pants, you know.
It's all
Trousers,
about the
I
pants. Football pants, baseball pants, soccer players' legs. Yes, these are the things we notice. Sorry.
and we all just love hockey players, you know. So there you go.
There is something about a hockey player, too. Yep. All
Even
the gear.
missing teeth, I don't know. There's just something about hockey players that make me go. Oh.
I imagine my husband's like sitting in the other room and he's like texting me occasional things like the last one was great comments I overhear my wife say while recording a podcast. I never shut up. Thanks, dear. I'm waiting for the next one to come in when he's hearing us talking about football players.
Oh, God.
So, Susie, you had another question.
Don't.
And I thought this is one that we were all interested in too. It was part of the what's coming up next when we were talking about that.
Oh.
Oh, so you're coming to Charm. Any
Yeah.
other book events that you have scheduled
So
or Charm?
I cannot wait for Charm. I'm counting down the days and I'm like, just hurry up, please hurry up, please hurry up. I literally want to book my ticket and no one will let me. They're saying to me, I have to wait. Just wait a little bit longer, Nick. A little bit longer. And I'm like, oh, I just want to book it. But yeah, I can't wait for Charmed. I've got a sign-in on Saturday, which is my first ever book signing. As a reader, as an author, anything. I've never been to one. So it's the first one on Saturday, and I am a little bit scared, a little bit nervous, but I'm excited too. It's just nice to go and see the people, you know, see people and just talk about books and be surrounded by like-minded people, I think. So yeah, I'm hoping that it's good and people come and see me. I've got this fear that I'm just going to be sat at my table and everyone's going to bypass me and just walk around me and be like, no, everyone speak to her. But it's just my brain.
I hear that from so many authors, and it's always one of those. I mean, even authors who have been to events before, authors who know that there are going to be people there to come see them, still, every author, I think, has that fear of nobody's going to want to sit with me. You know, it's that I'm going to be all by myself and nobody's going to come see me. And I know that's not going to be the case. Because we've been to events, and yes, you might have a lull, which take advantage of it because it's your chance to breathe. But especially because this is an indie author event, right?
Try to remember. Yeah.
And readers like to meet new authors, and readers like to see new faces. And you've got a pretty nice set of fans over there in the UK. We see them in your group a lot, and you've made some good connections over there. And I'm excited to hear after about how everything goes and about how exhausted you are and how you have no voice left from talking to people.
I hope so. I hope so. I've got yeah, I have got quite a few good readers over here. It was mad because I originally started off with all American readers that I'd sort of made friends with through the groups that I'd been in. And then to kind of find British people that actually were like finding me from groups and coming over and sort of saying, oh, I've read your book and it's nice to read a British author. And I'm like, yay. So it is nice that I've got some support, hopefully.
Okay. Are you bringing anybody with you when you come to Charm City?
I'm bringing my sister with me.
Oh, good.
I'm bringing my sister. I was going to bring Mr. Coco, but with the four kids at home, I kind of thought I need to give my mum sort of a little bit of extra help. So he's going to stay at home with the kids. And then hopefully the next time we come over, he can come with me instead.
Yeah. That's so great. Planning on the next time.
Yes. The next time. I'm already planning it.
We are already
planning the next time.
As if I come home, I might just not come home. I might just stay over there and just, you know, camp in someone's garden. Like, I'm just saying, I'm not leaving. You can't make me.
So how long are you going to be staying?
I'm not sure yet. I think about a week. Okay. So what my plan is, because obviously I've been speaking to Val for so long and I've never got to meet her or anything. So I think we're going to drive back to Syracuse together. We're going to do like a road trip and we're going to stop off at places along the way so that I get to see a little bit more of the States as well, and then stay there for a little bit and just hang out with her and just get to spend some time together before I have to come home. I'm already not going to want to come home.
I love it.
I love that you're making plans. This is the book community. I am making plans to stay with someone who I have never met before. I'm making plans to stay with someone who I have only ever known online. This is something we know well. This is an experience that we've had and I think is one of the most valuable parts of this community is the friendships that you create with people you've never met that you know are just as solid as if they lived next door. Yeah. And that bond is just incredible. And I love that you have that with Val. I love that the book world has brought that to so many people because none of us had ever met, like me, Julie, Ron, Susie, we'd never met before Indies 21.
21.
Yeah. That was the first time we'd met. And having that connection, having that support system, I think is so key. And that I love that you're like, it's not even a thought. It's like, well, Val and I are just going to, you know, drive up to Syracuse and and I'm never coming home.
You know, and you know what? We speak every single day and we've never run out of things to say. So I'm kind of hoping that in real life, that's going to be the case as well. We're just going to sit and just talk constantly. but it is amazing because literally Val messaged me and just sort of said to me, you know, we're in similar reader groups and we seem to like the same books. Would you like to do some buddy reading? And it's like, yeah, okay, cool. We'll do that. And I'm the only reader in my house. I've converted my sister now, but before that, like growing up and everything, I was the only reader. So I didn't have people to sort of discuss books with and talk to books about and everything. And so Val messaging was like, yeah, I've got a friend that likes books. And we just started messaging. And then she became someone that, you know, she just became such a my person. And it just happened organically. It wasn't like something that was forced, and it just grew and grew and grew. And it's amazing. She's like my best friend now. And it doesn't matter that I've not seen her in real life. It doesn't matter that I've not been able to give her a hug or anything. She's my person. And it's amazing. It's an amazing thing.
I love that so much.
And I know you said you were hoping that it would be the same when you come here. You hope that same type of relationship continues face to face. But I can tell you that when Michelle and I, we went, you know, we communicated at IAP, you know, we were close there, but it was Louisville, wasn't it? And it was our first trial of staying in the same room. And it's like, you never know what it's going to be like with other people. And it was great. I mean, we're at, like, it was just like
summer camp.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like this. It was crazy. So I think it's going to be perfect.
Yep. Because you
already have a relationship, even though you've never met in person. know, people complain about the internet all the time and the dangers of the internet, but all I keep seeing is how amazing it's been to bring so many people together that never would have found each other and provided the support and the friendship. And we've all been there where it's like, there is nobody right here that I can reach out to, but I know that I can just get online real quick and there's somebody I can reach out to right there. You know, and it just creates that bond even stronger, knowing that it's not an anonymous person, it's a friend.
Yeah.
Some of our best friends, you know, and the support is there, whether they're sitting next to you in a coffee house or on your couch, or they're hundreds and thousands of miles away or separated by an ocean, it doesn't matter anymore.
I mean, look at us. We spent a week together.
We did.
With we one did. Shower.
With one... I'm working on something for 2025. But yeah, so it becomes that becomes your community. That becomes your neighborhood. And, you know, honestly, where I live, I mean, Julie and Susie saw it, and you'll probably see it when you come next year, because we might come and do some s'mores here or something. I don't know. We'll see. I live in the middle of like a very rural area. I don't have a neighbor who I can pop next door to talk to. My sister lives 90 minutes away. You know, my best friend, my local bestie, is very close, but we're still, it takes me 30 minutes to get to her. But we could still just pop online, and here we are. And that community is so strong. I love it. Okay, can I put you on the spot for one more thing before we go into your 10 questions? Because yeah. I know you're talking about author groups and everything else. And you don't have to answer if you don't want to. I know I'm totally putting you on the spot. Authors that influence you, because you are a romance reader. Are there authors who you're like, okay, this is someone who I look up to, admire, emulate, appreciate? Who are those authors in your circle?
So I would have to say, out of the authors, so when I was first starting out in the whole author world, I reached out to people, and people that I had sort of cultivated a relationship with a little bit as a reader, and I reached out to them, and they, Lucy Score, she is one of the authors that I absolutely love. I love her to pieces. She is an inspiration to everyone. But it's not just Lucy that I love. It's Lucy's team. Joyce is such an amazing champion of readers, of writers, of authors, of everything. I remember messaging her, and I was so nervous to message her, because in my eyes, Joyce was like royalty in Romancelandia. She's like this amazing person. And I was like, so, and I'm not starstruck for Lucy. I mean, I was starstruck for Lucy when she replied to a message. I was like, ah, fangirl. But Joyce, she's just so nice and just so generous and kind, and her words and her time. And she's someone that I look up to a lot. I think she's amazing. The whole of Team Lucy is amazing. Avery was another one. She was another author that I messaged before I even started to think about sort of seriously publishing. And again, I didn't expect responses. I remember speaking to Val and sort of saying to her, shall I do it? Shall I message these authors? Like, they're not going to respond. And she was like, just message them. They might. And I wrote this big message to Avery, and I was so flabbergasted when she responded. I think she was on a holiday at the same time. So I didn't expect to have any kind of response at all. And Avery, I share a lot of qualities with Avery, the imposter syndrome. I know a lot of authors do that, but when she speaks, it's like she resonates with me. And a lot of the words that she says and a lot of things that she feels and that she goes through, I kind of go, yeah, that's exactly what I feel like. So to get a response from her as well, it was amazing. And it was genuine. It wasn't like an out of office reply, like, oh yeah, you can do this and you can do that. And then boom, there was so much thought and energy that went into it. So there's those two. I'm trying to think of other ones. I know there's more, and I'm just not thinking of them on the spot, but.
I know, I totally put you on the spot with that. And we can always do a follow-up. Always do a follow-up. I love that you had, First of all, we fangirl Joyce hard here too. So, you know, she, her contribution to the romance community and working with the authors that she works with is just incredible. She's an amazing resource and an amazing person. And yeah, I totally get the, I was like, can you fangirl a fangirl? Is that a thing? Because I'm totally fangirling fangirls.
I totally do.
Yeah. But I love that.
Knowledgeable too. I mean, Joyce is just, she's, I've reached out to her to ask a question on the PA side of things. She's just an incredibly nice person.
She really is. It's been a privilege.
The world of Romancelandia, it just kind of restored my faith in humankind a little bit. You know, we went through a real rocky time before I got back into the whole reading situation, and I was in a place where I was just like, humans, dogs, give me children, don't give me adults, hate them. And I just everything was negative, and I was in a very negative space, and all I could see was the negative. And then I joined all these groups, and I started to see these people. And I remember saying to my sister, like, I don't know if these people are real or not, or if I'm just actually seeing these people or not, because they're so nice, they're so kind, and they genuinely want to help you. And I struggled at the beginning because I kind of went, but do they? Because I was in that negative space, and I was just like, I don't think there's got to be a catch here. There's got to be a reason why, but there just isn't. You know, people like Joyce and in this world are just, they're just nice, and they're just here to restore our faith in humankind, I think.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
I love it.
All right, 10 questions. This is just a rapid fire, no thought, just going to be a this or a that. We're just going to throw them at you. Just answer them. Just a little get to know you. Julie, you're starting.
I did not do my homework. So we're only going to have 9 questions.
Okay.
In Susie's. Unless I can rapid think, which is not going to happen probably. Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Bad haircut or bad hair dye?
Bad hair dye.
Susie, you're none.
Beach or mountain vacation?
Mountain vacation.
Plan ahead or live in the moment?
Plan ahead.
Morning person or night owl?
I'm a bit of both, really. I don't sleep, so just the way that I am.
So translate them as you need to. Cookies and cookies or cake?
Cake.
Vanilla or chocolate?
Chocolate.
Draft or edit?
Edit.
All right, so we're actually going to have 11 because I just thought of other ones. Kindle or paperback?
Paperback.
Sneakers or heels?
Sneakers. Oh. And trainers.
Trainers, you're right. Sorry. So we think baby trackies. Trainers. TBR or mood reader?
Oh, mood reader. I had to eliminate the TBR. It gave me anxiety because I'd never finish it.
Right? Same. So what's on your Kindle now?
Oh, now, do you know what? I don't read Mafia, and my sister kept going on and on and on about this Mafia series, and she was like, read it. It's so good. And I was like, okay, fair play, I'll read it. So I was in a real slump. Nothing was catching my attention at all. And I started reading the Butcher Brothers. I think it's Boys of the District by Nikki Harris. Oh my God, it's so good. It's so good. She's an Australian author. And I love the fact that I can read the Australian through her words. It's amazing. Like I'm reading it and I can hear the accents because of the way she writes, which makes me then go, this is what they mean when they say that my books are very British. I never thought that before. Because I'm just reading them as a British person. And I'm like, this is what they mean. Right, I get it now.
We hear it. And I love that it's, as Americans, when we're reading it, I'm like, I can hear the inflections. I can hear the expressions on their faces sometimes. And I love that somebody asked you at one point to put a glossary in the front. Because, and you're not the only one. Sarah Matterson had that recently also, where people were like, I don't understand what this means. Can you translate? Because us American readers are kind of like, we're lazy. We don't want to, I'll Google it and say. But then there were times when I'm editing and I'm like, I'll put a little note. Is this a Britishism? Because I have no idea what you're talking about
It so is.
here.
It so is. I remember Valerie came up to me and she said to me, I don't know what sod means. You've just put sod off. What does that mean? And I'm like, oh, you guys don't have that over there. Oh, okay. Fair play. Fair play. And then it was you with the whilst. We don't say whilst over here. And I was like, ah, oh, okay.
Yes, that's very formal. If somebody over here says whilst, I'm like, can you take the stick out of your butt and get out of your Bentley so we can talk? Because, yeah, pinky in the air when you drink. But it's that common flow, but it does, it flows, which is kind of cool when I'm reading it.
Yes, us British people, we're very formal with our words. Some
Not all of them.
of us are. No, some of us are.
That's what I was
Some
about
of
to
us are.
say.
The funny thing is, the way that I speak is nothing like the way that my sister speaks. And you'll see when we come to Charm, she's like a proper Cockney, and she doesn't pronounce her letters, and she doesn't enunciate, and she says, and I'm like, oh, how do we come from the same people? Just don't.
It's a thing. It
It
happens here
really
too. I am excited to see how you react to all of the accents that you encounter when you're here, because you will.
I'm secretly mimicking them all. I have this bad thing with I hear people's accents and then I try to copy them and I try to mimic them in my head. And I tend to do it all the time. I'll go off and I'll start speaking in an accent from over here and my kids copy me and they do it now as well. But my youngest is 5 and we go to school and she always says to me, Mommy, can we talk American? And I'm like, okay, come on then. And we will then speak in American accents. And I'm trying to master the different ones that I'm finding. But so if you see me over there and you just hear me talking with an American accent, just know that I'm not taking the mickey. I'm just literally trying to just pick it up.
Now I want to hear an American accent.
Oh no, I'm not doing that.
Just when you come, you'll have to avoid Julie's daughter because she had me talking Southern for weeks.
No.
Oh,
We have to have video if Joey's there of the two of them having a conversation. Because I don't know if you'll understand half of what Joey says
it.
with his thick Alabama, but I think those two are going to be quite interesting. But I'm hoping he's going to be able to make it. But the accents over here could become very, very interesting. Susie's got her Jersey, and if I hang around my Southern people for too long, you won't understand me either. And yeah, Julie's daughter is what is that accent, Julie?
Well, she lived in Alabama for 4 years, so I think it just kind of comes and goes. It depends on her mood. Like, I don't know, when she gets going,
It
it'll
pops up.
come out.
I'm looking forward to meeting you, your sister. I giving you a hug, like a real hug, not a virtual one. I know I'm super excited that you're making Charm your first
Yes.
US book event. I was so excited when you said yes. I think we all did a little happy dance.
Yes.
We feel honored. We feel honored
Yes.
that you, I mean, obviously it was a great success. Ourselves in the back here.
Definitely.
Seriously, it's a great event, and I think it's going to be good for you, and I know
I
we
couldn't do
are
another
super
year of
excited.
watching
We're
pictures.
thrilled.
I couldn't do another year of just seeing it all through pictures. I was so jealous. I had FOMO so bad. And Val kept messaging me and I was like, oh, I want to be there. I couldn't do it again. I was like, I can't. I have to be there.
Oh, we are so excited that you're going to be here. And thank you for joining us today to talk about your books, to talk about your writing, to talk about your influences and your background. Julie, Ron, Susie, did you guys have any questions before we pull everything together and log off? Oh.
No, I think that this is, I have to say thank you because this is the first time we've come in on time.
Yes. Well, and I also didn't want, because
Yeah.
you're 5 hours ahead of us, so it's like 10:15 p.m. there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you, Coco,
Thank
so
you.
much. Any last parting?
Anything, words?
I don't think so.
Okay, cool.
Well,
thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Big hugs.
You'll have to come back again.
Big hugs.
And we'll have you back again.
I would love to come back again.
We'll do that for the next series. When this one's done, next series starts. Football.
From Marco's book. Yeah, Marcus's
book. Oh, Marcus's book, you know.
Yes.
Has to be.
It's got to have to be.
Own podcast.
It's going to be the Marcus show. It's gonna...
We all have to wear onesies, unicorn onesies.
I have one. Do I wore it to charm? I have no problem putting on the unicorn onesie for Marcus. All right. Thank you so much, sweetheart. I really appreciate you joining us and being on this with us and spending your time with us and everything else. So thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.